You're Locked On Maple Leafs, your daily podcast on the Toronto Maple Leafs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Leafs podcast, your one-stop shop for all things Leafs. I'm your host, Mike DiStefano from TSN 1050 Toronto Radio, also known as Al's brother from TSN's Overdrive. Hit me up on Twitter at @Mickey_Canuck. Follow the show as well at Locked On Leafs. And hey, if you like what you hear today, please consider subscribing to the podcast. Leave a rating and review as well. That would be much, much appreciated. And be a friend and tell a friend about Locked On Leafs. All right, yesterday's podcast went through, we examined the forward group of the team that finished up here in 2021. We kind of took a look back, you know, how did their season as a whole go over, dissected the regular season, a little bit from the playoffs, and then we just kind of discussed what we think the role of that player was going to be going forward with the team. And I'm going to do the exact same thing here today, but we're going to focus on defensemen and then the goaltenders. So we're going to start off with kind of our top four D-men. We'll move on to more of our depth pieces, you know, guys who, you know, the bottom pair slash the guys who filtered in and out and you know, some of the younger guys like Sandin and Liljegren. And then we'll get to the goalies kind of at the in the final segment here. But let's get right into it just like last time, because last time this took a while. I went up talking for like 50 minutes and I did not anticipate it to take that long. I even left out like the fringe guys to talk about, guys, you know, like Nick Patan and Nick Robertson. I had notes on all those guys and how they played and how I think they fit into this team's future, but it just wasn't in the cards once we hit that 50 minute mark, once we finished up the guys who actually played a full-time role with the team this year. So we'll do that with the defensemen, though, and let's start off with the top guys, the top pairing of Morgan Rielly and TJ Brodie. And I want to talk first about Morgan Rielly, because, you know, he's clearly like the team's number one guy. Like, he is the guy who the Maple Leafs have clung to. They've called him the number one for the longest time. He's quarterbacked this power play. He's a guy who, you know, had 70 points a couple of years ago, had a down year last season, but had a massive bounce back year here in 2021. And that's mainly what I want to talk about, the bounce back year at Morgan Rielly. You know, last year, just 27 points through 47 games, just 3 goals on the year, didn't score any goals on the power play, really just didn't have a great season overall, to be honest with you, last season. This year, a little bit of a different story. 35 points through 55 games, 5 goals, 30 assists, 35 points, had 12 points on the power play this year, which is more than the 7 he had last year. So, you know, the power play obviously was not very good. And Morgan Rielly, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think that he is the reason why the power play wasn't good, but I'm also not going to sit here and say that he was good on the power play. I think Morgan Rielly is a smart player. He knows where to put the puck. The problem is there's not enough guys who are going to shoot it. And in my estimation, maybe it's a little old school guy in me, but I feel like there needs to be a little bit more of a shot presence, especially at the point. And Morgan Rielly just doesn't really have that. Only 1 power play goal the last 2 years as being the quarterback of that power play. To me, it's just not good enough. It's pretty much the only like negative thing that I want to say about Morgan Rielly is going forward, as great a defenseman as I think he is, he's a very smart player. When he's jumping up into the rush, he can create offensively, he can score, he can set up plays. But for whatever reason, on the power play, he doesn't do it for me. I don't know if Sandin's the guy, if you know, the future of this team's power play at the point is not on this roster yet. I really don't know exactly what they're going to do. I have some theories I'll talk about a little bit later on during the offseason once we get to get to get rolling here with the offseason. We start talking about next season. But for now, I don't know about Morgan Riley as the guy here on the power play. But let's go through kind of the rest of his stats. So he had 101 shots, a 5% shooting percentage, which is up from his 2.4 from last year, but also down from his career year at 9.0. But his career shooting percentage is 4.9. So basically right on par with his career shooting percentage at about 5% here. 23 minutes, 37 seconds he averaged time on ice here. So he was a massive, massive part of this team. You know, the stats don't necessarily say much about Morgan Riley this year. I mean, 35 points in 55 games, nothing to snuff at. That's not too shabby here for a defenseman. But, you know, I think that Morgan Riley, the reason why he had a big bounce back is because, you know, he just felt comfortable playing with TJ Brody. I think last year, you know, he was swapping in and out partners. It was Cody Ceci, then it was Tyson Barrie, played a little bit, I think, with Jake Muzzin at times. And, you know, I think Marty Marincin ended up playing with him a little bit. And it didn't really, he couldn't find any chemistry with anybody. I think he was in his head. And he wasn't activating much last year either. And I think mainly because he didn't have a defensive partner that was reliable in his own end if he activated and they didn't score, and then the other team came on, you know, a two-on-one rush. He didn't really trust his D partner to be able to get him out of that jam. So, you know, he didn't jump up into the rush as much last season. And I think his production kind of, that's a big reason why his production wasn't really there last year, in my opinion, and why it kind of ticked back up closer to that 2018-2019 season where he scored 72 points and 20 goals, if you recall. I think that we'll continue to see that. Like, he's 26 years old. This defenseman is extremely young. And well, he's not extremely young, but he's not over the hill. You know, like, he had a career high 72 points a couple of years ago. I'm not going to say that from here he's going downhill. I don't think that's to be the case. I still think Morgan Riley's a top pairing defenseman. His contract is interesting because he has one more year left. He's going into a contract year, and the next question is whether or not he's going to be able to, the Leafs can be able to afford him. And I've heard a lot of people discussing that, you know, maybe trade Morgan Riley going into his contract year so that you get something for him as opposed to walking him to free agency, just because you don't know what he wants, what he can get on the open market, if he'll go to the open market, and what exactly he's going to cost this team going forward and if they'll be able to afford it, you know. And I don't subscribe to that. I think they need Morgan Riley. I think when you look at this defense as a whole, they really bought in, and they were a really stabilizing force through the regular season and even through the playoffs. Like, defensively, this was not, they didn't have many defensive lapses even in the playoffs. I guess there was those couple of gaffes, you know, but for the most part, you know, they were pretty stable, and it helped also improve the goaltending. Like, keep in mind, this team was the top five defensive team this year. I think they were, what, 27th last year and then all the way up to fifth. And Morgan Riley is really the head of the snake here. He's not like the defensive defenseman type guy, but he's certainly, I think, the alpha male of the defenseman. He's a leader in that, on that defensive core. So I think Morgan Riley has a future with this team. I hope that they figure something out, because I think that you look at a top three of Morgan Riley, TJ Brody, and Jake Muzzin, I think you're pretty set. You got something really good to work with there, and I believe that Morgan Riley will have to come back for this team to kind of keep her going. I don't like the thought of moving on from Riley with the assumption that Sandin can step up into his place, which is something that I've read a lot online. I don't know if Sandin's ready for that quite yet. And maybe, you know, if you want a top line of Muzzin and TJ Brody, I don't know. Like, you're leaving a lot. You're leaving a lot of offense on the table. Like, as much, you look at 35 points in 55 games, yeah, that doesn't look like a whole lot, but, you know, he does create a lot of offense when he's out there defensively. He's got a terrific first pass. He'll get it up to Matthews and to Nylander and Tavares, and then, you know, that starts their breakout, right? Like, he's a breakout star. And then he also likes to jump up into the rush himself. So I guess that's a long way of saying that I liked the bounce back year from Morgan Riley. I liked what I saw. He was one of the best players for the Leafs during the playoffs as well. And I truly believe that a big reason why he had such a terrific season on both ends of the ice is mainly because he had a steady partner in TJ Brody. So let's move on and let's talk a little bit about TJ Brody, because boy, oh boy, was this ever a home run signing, an absolute home run signing by Kyle Dubas. Like, people, I still don't understand why people think that this is Dubas's fault, that this team isn't there. But regardless, you know, signs TJ Brody to a 4-year deal at $5 million a season. Look, if he can give us another couple of years of what Brody did this season, this is a home run signing. He really stabilized this defensive front, really helped Morgan Riley grow, allowed him to be a little bit more creative and a little bit more free-flowing with knowing that he's got a guy back there in TJ Brody who can defend the two-on-one. And at times, I think me and Tony Ferrari talked about it quite a bit, talked about it a lot when it was happening too, that Brody often, like on two-on-ones, although he liked to slide a little bit, he was still an extremely reliable defenseman. Not very often was he making mistakes. He didn't turn the puck over. And surprisingly, actually has a pretty good breakout first pass as well for a guy who's, I guess, more so known as a defensive player at this point in his career. I know he's put up stats in the past, but that's not truly, I think, what his game is. That's not really what he showed this year. Played some time on the second power play, but I think that was more, again, like of an IQ type thing, just to kind of see if they can get something going with him on that power play. But again, he's just an absolute machine. He was such a terrific player. So through the 56 games in the regular season, he had just one goal, that one coming against the Montreal Canadiens, 13 assists for 14 points. He had 3 assists on the power play. So, you know, just a couple of power play points when he was out there this season. Averaged 21 minutes of ice time, 84 blocks, 34 hits. So, you know, this is a guy who he didn't hit very much. He's very active with his stick, but he's a guy who would definitely hop out in front of a puck. You know, any slapper coming in, a shot coming through to the goaltender, he has no fear in hopping out and jumping in front of that puck and blocking it. So, you know, that was something that we all saw in TJ Brody. But, you know, he's just a fantastic player. And at 30 years old, you just hope that he can keep this going and that it doesn't start to decline. Play doesn't start to decline, because I thought he was fantastic this season. Great again in the playoffs. And again, that top line, that top unit of Morgan Riley and TJ Brody, I thought really stabilized this defensive core, gave them a true top pairing who could kind of do it all. They could play in the offensive zone, they could play in the defensive zone, and they were responsible in both ends. So I really liked what I saw from those two, and that, you know, those two guys, and TJ Brody especially, really exceeded my expectations, I thought. And then the playoffs, you know, TJ Brody's the guy who brought this thing to overtime. I think it was game 6, I want to say, when he brought it to overtime. So, you know, only scored one goal all year and then scores to bring game to overtime, a goal in the playoffs as well. Unfortunately, Leafs not able to get it done, as we well know. Regardless, thought he had a pretty good playoff as well. So Morgan Riley and TJ Brody, these are two guys who I expect to be with this club next year, despite everything that is being discussed online about how maybe Morgan Riley could be a trade candidate. I just don't see it. I would rather them keep him, try and figure something out. But I understand that the salary cap is what it is, and he may be a cap casualty at some point. But I don't think you do that going into next year, because there's not really not anybody on the lineup who can replace him. So you're going to have to go out and get somebody. And there's not many players that are Morgan Riley caliber that you can get for $5 million, the price that Morgan Riley is playing for this year. So that's my thought on that top line. All right, I'll come back and discuss the other two guys in the top four, and then we'll discuss the depth and then quickly touch on the goaltenders as well. So we'll do all that when we come back here on the Locked On Leafs podcast. Stocks, memes, rocket ships, day trading can be a lot of fun, but if you want to grow your long-term wealth and make it to the moon, you should open up a Wealthfront investment account today. Investing can be complicated, but whether you're a beginner or you've been investing for years, Wealthfront makes it easy. They have the right tools for every portfolio. Wealthfront is trusted with over $20 billion of assets, and you can get your first $5,000 managed for free by going to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL. All you need is $500 to get started. Grow your wealth in an easy way and let Wealthfront do the work for you. To get your first $5,000 managed free for life, go to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL. That's WELTHFRONT.com/lockedonNHL to start growing your savings. Go to wealthfront.com/lockedonNHL and get started today. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for your auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and then choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, price at Rock Auto are always reliably low, and the same for the professionals as the do-it-yourselfers. So why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com and see all the parts available for your car or your truck, and write Locked On their How'd You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts a car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com. All right, welcome back to Locked On Leafs, the daily Maple Leafs podcast. I am Mike DiStefano, the host of this program. So we already talked about Morgan Rielly and Morgan Rielly and TJ Brodie and how great they were for this team, stabilizing the defense. But they weren't necessarily the shutdown pairing on this team. Nope, that went to Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall. We'll start with Jake Muzzin because this is a player both of these guys really stepped up big for me this year. Mainly, Justin Hall had a massive leap from last season to this, but you know, Jake Muzzin is just steady Eddie type guy. You know, so 53 games, scored 4 goals, 23 assists, had 27 points, which was pretty darn good. Actually, had a couple of goals in the playoffs as well before getting hurt, obviously. But this is the pairing that brought the physicality. You know, these were the guys who were eating pucks for breakfast and going out there laying out hits and dishing the pain. You know, so Jake Muzzin, 94 blocks, 101 hits, led the team in both categories. So Jake Muzzin is the sandpaper guy that this decor has, right? Like Morgan Rielly, bit more of an offensive rover type defenseman. TJ Brodie, kind of a two-way-ish guy, slightly leaning towards as a defensive dude as well. But Jake Muzzin, this guy is that gritty sandpaper, gonna come make it difficult for you in front of the net type of guy. Like, he was out there clearing the crease, making sure that Jack Campbell saw everything this season. And a big reason why Campbell had a massive year was because these guys who I'm talking about today really stepped up and had a fantastic season and really bought in and played with good structure and didn't make many mistakes in their own zone. When they did make mistakes, namely in the playoffs, you know, Travis Dermott, Rasmus Sandin leading to game-winning goals, just saying, that was when things broke down and it became an issue. But it didn't happen very often. But Jake Muzzin, I thought, again, a fantastic season. And he started off, too, like, with quite a bit of offense, like a lot more offense that he's used to. And I think I even picked him up in fantasy because I was like, okay, in a categories league. He's picking up blocks, he's picking up hits, and he's actually getting some points too. He had a couple of goals like that week. He was getting some secondary assists, and so I picked him up, and I think he got some time on the second power play unit as well. He did end up with one power play point, I suppose, but 103 shots, which led all defensemen, so he wasn't afraid to shoot the puck either, and we saw that happen in the playoffs. You know, Jake Muzzin was not afraid to shoot the puck and got rewarded with a couple of goals was it game five? Yeah, he was the guy who tied it up or brought it to overtime in game five. Again, it didn't do anything, but he did it, right? So, you know, he's super reliable as a shutdown defenseman, but also isn't afraid to also, you know, go play in the offensive zone, get pucks on net, and be a little physical as well, and I had some time on the power play. So Jake Muzzin to me is just like a must-have kind of guy on your blue line. Like, I really do believe he's a perfect number three. I don't think he's a top pair type guy. He's not somebody who can do it all, like I think top pair defensemen need to be able to do. But as a number three shutdown defenseman, Jake Muzzin is almost as good as they come. I really do believe that, and he does a lot of amazing things for this team. And at times this year, you know, you think like, man, Muzzin's the most important defenseman on this team. There are times where you think that. You truly, truly do. And certainly you think about game seven in the playoffs, you'll wish you had Jake Muzzin there to stir things up a little bit, you know, get a little physical. Maybe that would, you know, lay a big hit, wake that team up. Because he did that a lot during the regular season. Dropped the mitts a couple times. You know, Muzzin's that type of guy. He's a grit grinder. I absolutely love him as a player. And I thought that he had himself a pretty banner year. Along with his partner, Justin Hall. This guy, 2 years ago, was in Babcock's doghouse. Basically sat the entire year. I think he played like six games the whole season. And then 2 years later, anchoring a shutdown pair along with Jake Muzzin. Well, who, I guess Muzzin's the anchor, but, you know, a shutdown defenseman, Justin Hall, has become a reliable number four, a reliable number four shutdown defenseman. I didn't think that was going to happen when he first came into the NHL and Babcock was afraid to play him. And then he, you know, when he did play, he was a little timid, making mistakes, didn't want to make the wrong play, and then, you know, end up back into the doghouse. So then he didn't make any plays. Whereas when Keefe took over, Justin Hall, and keep in mind, Keefe coached Justin Hall in the minors back when they made that run to the finals, when they won with the Marlies to the Calder Cup. Justin Hall played an instrumental role on Sheldon Keefe's squad. So Keefe knows Hall pretty well, and he trusted Justin Hall. And I think that trust was massive for him because he was able to play through mistakes and kind of figure out his game at the next level. Like, this is a late bloomer, Justin Hall. Like, he's 29 years old. People forget that because he's only really been a factor with this team for the last 2 years. But he's 29 years old. He's no spring chicken. But really elevated his game this year and solidified this top four, which I thought was something that they kind of needed to happen, right? Like, they needed somebody to step up and be that guy next to Jake Muzzin. Justin Hall did it at the second half of last year, and they're saying, was this a mirage? Because then when Muzzin went down the playoffs, you know, Hall kind of turtled, like he was exposed as not a top four, not a shutdown kind of guy. But this year, in the few games he played without Muzzin, whether that was in the regular season or in the playoff game, I thought that Justin Hall actually held his own. You know, I think he has legitimized himself as a top four shutdown defenseman. I don't know if I said his stats yet, but he had 2 goals, 18 assists for 20 points. So, you know, this is a guy who also had a little bit of offense to him this year. You know, That's not too shabby. 20 points in 55 games for someone who we weren't even sure could be an NHLer a couple of years ago as a defensive defenseman who had a lot of time playing in his own zone, a lot of defensive zone starts. That's what's also kind of crazy about the 47 combined points from Muzzin and Hall. A lot of their zone starts were in their own end, and they were able to, you know, go in, get pucks back, force it up ice, in a way they went and created offense. 84 blocks, 82 hits. So, Justin Hull, not afraid of contact, whether that's with pucks or with bodies. But it's interesting because Justin Hull, and now we're getting to the point in these players where when you get to the expansion draft, he is somebody who is one of the biggest question marks about who you keep. You know, we talked yesterday about the forwards, guys like Kerfoot, Engvall. You know, those types of players are going to be most likely be available. You know, if they don't end up re-signing Zach Hyman, he might be available to take if they want to sign him. But as far as defensemen go, I think Riley, Muzzin, Brody, locks. Absolute locks to keep. The way that it works is you can either keep six forwards, 3D and a goalie. Maybe it's 7 forwards, actually, 3D and a goalie. And I've heard a lot of people saying, like, go 4-4 and try and keep Justin Hull. Like, and then expose a guy like Dermott and maybe Dermott gets taken, but don't let Justin Hull get taken. And I agree with that. I subscribe to that notion. And it really kind of depends on two things, actually. One, they obviously cannot, that means that they cannot re-sign Zach Hyman before the deadline. Because if you go 4-4, you know, you're keeping Marner, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander. Those are your 4 forwards. And then everyone else needs to be left exposed. So you either don't sign Hyman until after the expansion draft. But you also need to sign one of these other defensemen to a extension, because in order to meet requirements, the Maple Leafs actually need to sign one of Dermott, Bogosian, or Ben Hutton to a contract extension so that they meet the minimum requirements of eligible defensemen exposed. And what that means is they need to have at least one eligible defenseman who's played either 26 games this year or 54 games over the last 2 years with at least one more year remaining on their contract. And as of now, Justin Hull is actually the only guy who fits that criteria outside that top three. So they can't keep Hull because the other three don't fit the criteria. So they either have to sign one of those three guys in order to keep Hull anyways. So that's kind of a side tangent, obviously. But it is important to know going into the Seattle draft expansion lottery that, like, these scenarios kind of play out. You know, these are what's going on right now. But yeah, Justin Hull had an absolutely fantastic season for the Maple Leafs. Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, we'll chat about the bottom pairing defensemen. And just like I did yesterday, we're not going to have enough time to talk about the goalies. I'll have to make an entire show designated to goaltenders, and we'll do that tomorrow. But coming up after the break, we'll get to guys like Dermott, Sandin, Bogosian, Hutton, and we'll also chat a little bit about Timothy Liljegren and one other defenseman who I need to acknowledge in this podcast. And it's an interesting reason why, but I'll explain that all next. Bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on your sports action. The NHL playoffs are in full swing, and you can track all the action at betonline.ag. Get all the latest news, odds, and info on your sports needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC, MMA action, and more. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website and use your mobile device to sign in today. Use the promo code LOCKEDON and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 50% off your first deposit at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Lucy Nicotine is a company founded by Caltech scientists and former smokers looking for a better and cleaner nicotine alternative. Finally, tobacco alternatives that don't suck. Researched and developed for 3 years to be made for people, not patients. Lucy has created a nicotine gum with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, wintergreen, cinnamon, and pomegranate. Lucy also has a lozenge with 4 milligrams of nicotine that comes in 3 flavors, cherry ice, citrus, and mint. Lucy lozenges and gums are FSA and HSA eligible, so you can use your FSA cards to purchase Lucy now. And it's convenient and discreet. Products can be enjoyed anywhere, on flights, at work, on the go, or even in the gym. It's 2021. Get rid of your cigarettes, unplug your vape, throw out your dip, and get some Lucy nicotine gum or lozenges now. This is the real deal. A subscription to Lucy comes directly to your door each month. It's so simple, you don't even have to leave your house because Lucy has delivery down. Lucy lozenges and gums are also FSA and HSA eligible, so you can spend pre-tax dollars on them. Locked On NHL Network listeners, go to lucy.co and use promo code LOCKEDONNHL to get 20% off all products on your first order, including gum or lozenges. That's lucy.co and use the promo code LOCKEDONNHL at checkout. Also, I do have to give this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine derived from tobacco. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Lucy.co and be sure to use that promo code LOCKEDONNHL. All right, welcome back to the Locked On Leafs podcast. Mike DiStefano with you, the host of the show. And just a reminder, the Leafs may be out and done, but Locked On Leafs is still a daily podcast here. So make sure that you are subscribed and get that daily show directly to your phone each and every day, Monday through Friday. So we're going to continue here kind of examining and analyzing the defensive group from this season. We already talked about our first pair, we talked about our second pair, and now we're going to talk about kind of the bottom pairing guys and the stragglers, you know, the guys who kind of just filtered in and out throughout the season, and the youngsters who got kind of some a taste of action this season. But let's start with Travis Dermott, because he's kind of one of the most interesting players at this point for the Maple Leafs. At 24 years old, no longer an extremely young player. He's no longer, I would say, a prospect. He's now, I don't know if he's a veteran, but, you know, he's a couple of years in the league. And I think this is what Travis Dermott is. I'm not sure that he's got much progression left in him, to be quite honest with you. That said, just talked about how Justin Hall took steps at age 28, 29. I mean, sure, I suppose it's possible that Dermott could do that. But I think this is what Dermott is. I think he's a third-pairing defenseman, and that's just what he is. And that's totally fine. You know, he's an NHLer. I do know that. Travis Dermott is an NHLer. So he played in 51 games this year, 2 goals, 4 assists for 6 points. Didn't get much time on the power play at all. Only averaged 13 minutes per game, though, this year. Had 35 blocks and 44 hits. So, you know, not afraid to get physical, obviously. We've noticed that a little bit. But Travis Dermott, look, he's prone to making a mistake or two. He's prone for being, you know, inconsistent. And this is the player who I'm kind of hoping gets taken in the draft lottery, or at the very least, the Leafs explore giving him a change of scenery. I think he needs that, and I think the Leafs, I mean, he's a decent depth defenseman to have, I suppose, but I believe that he's somebody who can be in a top six somewhere, so I would prefer that the Leafs just move on from him. But Travis Dermott, he didn't have a terrific, he didn't have a horrific season or a terrific season. It just was, it was what it was. But obviously, the thing that's really going to stick out about Dermott, and it'll be somewhat unfortunate if he does end up getting traded this offseason, or if he gets claimed by Vegas or Seattle, is that, you know, what I'm always going to remember him for is the giveaway in game number six that led to the game-winning goal in overtime by Jesperi Kotkaniemi here in round one against the Habs. That's what I'm going to remember Travis Dermott for, probably for like the rest of my life, to be honest with you, unless he does something super cool or even more dumb at some point in his career. But I think that's what I'm always going to remember him for, because that was just, you know, a brutal giveaway at an awful, awful time, and essentially like was, to a lot of people, the nail in the coffin on the Leafs season. There wasn't a lot of Leaf fans that felt confident that the Leafs were going to win Game 7 once the Habs rallied from down 3-1 to tie it, to bring it to a Game 7. I mean, you had Toronto fans going, yeah, we're going to win, yeah. But if you talk to like real Toronto fans, there was skepticism, there was doubt. And for good measure, because of what transpired, that's kind of what Toronto does. But the biggest, I think, mistake of the series was both Galchenyuk's brutal giveaway and it, what was that, game four? Five? Yeah, in game five. And then the brutal giveaway in game six by Dermott. And those were kind of the two biggest mistakes that were made through the playoffs, and that's just always I'm going to remember him as. But besides that, you take a look at like what his future is going to be with the team. Look, you got Riley and Brody. I mean, this is assuming that what I think is going to happen with Riley coming back, but like Riley and Brody, who technically are both under contract to return anyways, as your top pairing, Muzzin and Hall as your second pairing. And then your third pairing, I mean, you can bring in Dermott. Sandin's definitely going to be in the conversation. Dermott's a guy who plays both sides of the ice, can play left and right D. And when Bogosian was hurt towards the end of the year, that's kind of when Dermott had an opportunity to play a little bit more. Also, he was kind of the guy who got the spot duties when Muzzin would go down. So, like, he's got versatility, which is good, but he hasn't really, like, performed all that well when given the opportunities to play. I think that's the biggest issue for me. He's been given a lot of chances, and kind of like a Jake Gardner-esque, where it's like he just makes a couple of really costly errors, and it just can't get over it. And I think he's just kind of worn his welcome a little bit. But he's versatile. He can play both sides of the ice. He's someone who clearly Keefe believes in, has some trust in. He's another one of those old Marlies guys who he played with. I think one also won the championship a few years back. But Travis Dermott, a little bit of a question mark on him and his future here in Toronto. Because whether or not he goes in the expansion draft or potentially they move him, I don't know what he's going to be asking for as for a contract, but he's an RFA this year, took a little bit of a haircut. I think he played for like $800,000 last year. I'd be kind of surprised if he played for that little amount of money again this year, which is why I also think that he would probably welcome a change of scenery himself as well. Because I just don't see where he's going to fit into this lineup, because Sandin's going to be that other guy on the left. I think Sandin has earned a spot in this top six, so you're either going to flip Dermott to the right
or, and to do that, I mean, that means that Bogosian doesn't come back, or you don't fill that spot, maybe Timothy Liljegren, or you fill it another way, you find another free agent, kind of like a Zach Bogosian type player who came in as a veteran, you know. So Dermott, he's just kind of a guy on the outside looking in my opinion, going forward. All right, let's talk about Zach Bogosian really quickly. I believe, also Dermott actually, in order to keep Justin Hall, I mean, technically signing Dermott to a one-year extension would help that. If they agree to take Dermott as the pick, I guess would be kind of the what they would do. All right, now let's get to Zachy Bogosian. He had a great season. All things considered, there was little to no expectations on Bogosian. You know, he did not play well the last couple of years in Buffalo. He wore out his welcome in Atlanta slash Winnipeg, I guess, once they moved. And kind of revitalized his career a little bit when he signed with Tampa last year and ended up winning a cup playing alongside Victor Hedman. But the question was always, well, did Hedman just carry Bogosian because Hedman's that good? And it's a fair question. But honestly, I actually liked Zach Bogosian. He was not a liability. I thought that he was actually fairly consistent on a nightly basis. You know, killed penalties. He was out there. You know, he's physical. Had 67 hits on the year through 45 games. He's not going to produce any offense. Didn't score any goals. He had 4 assists, but that's not what you're expecting from Zach Bogosian. But, you know, a guy who you just shove out there for 14, 15 minutes as a third pair, kill some penalties, be a little physical, give you a little bit of jam. That's all you asked of him, and if that's all you're asking, he delivered. And at $1 million, that was a bargain. And apparently, he wasn't too happy with his role. However, I think it was Darren Dreger was saying this on TSN, that Bogosian, he's not 100% sure if Bogosian's going to want to return because he wasn't exactly thrilled with his role this past season. Well, whatever his role this season was would have to be the same role next season. So if he wasn't thrilled with it this year, A, I'm not sure exactly what he expected. Maybe he thought that he was going to win that second pairing spot from Justin Hall. I don't know. But clearly it wasn't what he expected. But it was what I expected. I believe it's what you expected. A third line defenseman who kill some penalties, and that's about it. That's what we're going to get from him. And that's what he gave us. I don't know if he wants more. If he does want more, then, you know, whether that's more money or, you know, wants to play in the top four somewhere. Like, 30 years old. He's not old, right? Like, he probably still has a couple more years left to play. He was a top five pick. He's got high expectations for himself. He's got a cup in the bank. You know, so I would understand if Bogosian decides to move on, if he feels like he's kind of reinvigorated his career to a point where somebody wants to give him a little bit more money, maybe like $2.5 million, where Toronto's just not going to do that. They can't do that. They can't afford it, unfortunately. And if that's the case, then, you know, so be it, I suppose. That we got one pretty solid year out of Bogosian, and I think Bogosian was also a nice guy that Sandin was able to lean on when he got to play with Bogosian. So I think that it kind of all worked out well for Kyle Dubas and Bogosian and the partnership he had with the Maple Leafs this year, because definitely hit above his weight, definitely well worth the $1 million that he was paid, and helped stabilize this team's defense. Definitely did. Okay. Quickly, we'll talk about the youngsters. So, Rasmus Sandin, thought that he played excellent during, like, the last couple weeks of the regular season. The playoffs, it was very up and down. Quite inconsistent. Didn't play well game one, then came out, played pretty good in game two. Scored a goal in game two. And then didn't play great in game three. And then game four... Was it game four or five? I don't remember which game it was, but... Oh, it was game five, I want to say. They took him out. Or was it game four? I can't remember. All these games kind of blur. I believe it was game five, actually. They took him out for game four in the back-to-back. They put him back in game five, and then he made two costly errors, resulting in two goals, like, directly. Then you think about game one, also the Paul Byron goal. You know, he wasn't able to back-check and separate Byron from the puck, and he was able to score shorthanded. And win that game 2-1. So, like, I'm just thinking in my head right now, trying to think, three or four goals in that series kind of directly related to poor play by Rasmus Sandin. There was the one where he tried to clear the puck and it got intercepted at the half wall, ended up into the back of the net less than 10 seconds later. He got bodied by Jesperi Kotkaniemi in front of the net with a loose puck out in front of Campbell. He couldn't find it, and Jesperi able to just kind of poke it in, but it was Sandin who was unable to clear Kotkaniemi from the crease and clear out that garbage. And didn't allow his goalie enough time to find the puck and cover it before Kotkaniemi found it and put it into the back of the net. So, you know, there was a couple of costly errors. He showed some inconsistencies and some rawness and a little bit of his undersize coming through the playoffs, where, you know, the game gets physical, gets heavier. You know, I think he has a bright future with this team. I do believe that he's a second, third pair type of player, definitely a future NHLer. You know, he's a very smart player. He knows how to pass the puck. He's got a great first pass. He can skate well. I think that he will be a piece of this future. I think he's solidified himself regardless of the playoff struggles. I think that he has solidified himself, and they'll work through those kinks through next season. I think played just 9 games, but had 4 assists in those 9 games in the regular season. Played a handful of games through the playoffs. I think he ended up playing 5 or 6 games in the playoffs, ended up scoring a goal as well. So, you know, Rasmus Sandin, I think, is a pretty quality piece. He's still young, 20 years old, trying to figure out the NHL. So he's somebody who definitely is going to be coming back, obviously, under contract, and I think has solidified himself as an everyday NHLer, and he'll start off with, you know, some third line minutes, possibly get some power play time, whether it's on the top unit or the second unit. He's played both at parts this year. So Sandin definitely going to be a big piece of the future here for this team. They think he could be kind of a top 4 guy. I think he's the top 4 guy. Maybe a 4. Like, ceiling as a 3, I think, but, you know, a 3-4-5 kind of guy. So he'll definitely develop over the course of the next couple of seasons, but next year I think he's going to be a first full go in the NHL, and it'll be his, you know, his 21 year, I guess, and that's a pretty good spot, I think, for a 21-year-old to establish himself in the NHL. Moving to another 21-year-old, one who is currently 21, Timothy Liljegren, who only played 2 games in the NHL this year, wasn't fantastic, averaged 15 minutes in those 2 games, 3 hits, 2 blocks, I guess, took a penalty as well, and had 1 shot, but played well in the minors, in the AHL. And the reason why I bring him up is because Liljegren, I think this is kind of a boom or bust type of offseason for him. I think he's somebody as a first-round pick, you know, you start to sour on these guys a little bit as they get into their early 20s and aren't contributing for your team. And Liljegren's kind of getting to that age now. You know, at 21, 22... you hope that he can crack the lineup on a pretty consistent basis, and hopefully next season he can do that. I think he's shown flashes that he can do that in the handful of NHL games he's had. I thought that his game definitely took a leap in the minors this year. I know that a lot that I read at least told me that. We've spoken with Tony Ferrari. We've spoken with, you know, a bunch of people who cover the Marlies, you know, closer than I do. and Timothy Liljegren has taken strides. And at one point, there was a legitimate question of whether or not he was a legitimate top six defenseman. And I think after a better season in the minors this year, and I think after they got a look at him on the taxi squad quite a bit as well, I think they believe that he is a third pairing defenseman at least. And I think next year, I think if Bogosian's gone, that's kind of Liljegren's job to grab. It's going to be an extremely young pair of Sandin and Liljegren, but they played well in the Marlies together. Why not give him an opportunity up here with the big club? And, you know, these are two young defensemen that this team is relying on going forward. So, you know, that's how I feel about the defensemen of the future of this team. It's how I feel about the defensemen of the now in the top four category, at least. And two more quick guys I want to talk about. One, Ben Hutton, who only got into four games. He was brought over from, I believe, the Anaheim Ducks, I want to say, at the deadline for like a fifth round pick. But yeah, only gotten into four games. Averaged 18 minutes in those games. Had three blocks, seven hits. Didn't register a point. Had three shots on goal. Look, Ben Hutton, I think, is a candidate as like this team's seventh defenseman going forward. I like Ben Hutton. I think that he's a quality player, you know, a third pair kind of guy, and he gives you a little bit of a different edge, I think. Like, he's more of a defensive guy. So Ben Hutton to me is somebody who, if I'm the Leafs, and like I said, one of Dermott, Bogosian, or Hutton need to be extended if you even want to talk about protecting Justin Hall in the expansion draft. I think Ben Hutton is the guy who I would like to extend. Give him a one-year contract, come back for like $850,000, and you can compete, potentially end up, you know, with an opportunity to play a little bit and compete for that as a third pair defenseman. And if not, you're the seventh guy, one injury, you're in the lineup. And that's how I feel about Ben Hutton. And the guy who I want to talk about real quickly, more so because he didn't play this year, and I didn't really realize he didn't play because his name got brought up a lot for whatever reason, considering he didn't get a game in. But good old Marty Marincin did not play for the Maple Leafs this year. That's right. We didn't have to watch Marty Marincin play for Toronto all season. Did you know that? Did you know that? I know you probably knew that, but you're thinking in your head, you're like, oh yeah, we did. He didn't have to play. Really? He didn't play? Not one game? I thought I heard this, that. Yeah, he was called up playing the taxi squad, got called up to the main club, didn't quite play, then went to the taxi squad again, then was sent down to the minors, to the Marlies, then back on the taxi squad, but never officially played an NHL game for the Toronto Maple Leafs this season. And I think that just goes to prove how much better this team's defense actually was, and healthier, right? So Morgan Rielly stayed healthy all year. Brody, healthy all year. Muzzin, healthy all year. Hall, healthy all year. Zach Bogosian had that injury late in the season where he missed, about a month or so, 6 weeks maybe, about a month, you know. But outside of that, they were a very, very healthy blue line this year, and they didn't have to go down the well. You know, they had opportunities where they were able to play Sandin a little bit. Well, Sandin was hurt, too, at the beginning of the season. Let's not forget about that, too. But once he came back, you know, they were able to play Sandin. They were able to play Dermott. They were able to play, you know, Hutton got into a couple of games. Liljegren got into a couple of games. But it was mainly because they were just trying to spell some guys, or they were just trying to get looks at some of these guys, not because of injury, and they were forced into the lineup. Sandin was forced into the lineup because of the Bogosian injury, but outside of that, there wasn't really much forced, I would say, into the lineup, and not having to play Marty Marincin. Well, that's a win. Absolute win. All right, so as predicted, we have definitely run out of time again. We did not get to our goaltenders, which means that's what's going to lead off tomorrow's show here on the Locked On Leafs podcast. But I would like to thank you for listening to today's show, and thanks for listening and supporting. You can subscribe to the Locked On Leafs podcast on all podcasts and platforms and receive daily Leafs content. Follow myself on Twitter at @Mickey_Canuck. Follow the show at Locked On Leafs. Again, I'll be back with another episode tomorrow. We'll be going over the goalies, and then might just do like some roundup, actually. Talk about what's going on in the NHL. The Habs, congratulations to Montreal, I suppose. Congrats to Scott and Laura over from Locked On Canadiens. They were on our show quite a bit. And look, I didn't think they were going to... I did not think that they were going to beat, well, definitely they were going to beat us, but then I also did not think that they were going to, you know, strike lightning twice and beat Winnipeg, sweep Winnipeg at that. But hey, what do I know? Apparently, absolutely nothing, because it's exactly what happened. So we'll talk a little bit about what Montreal's doing, why they're winning, what the recipe for success has been, and we'll chat a little bit about what else is going around in the NHL playoffs. But that's to do it for here for today's show. I'm back with another episode tomorrow. But until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On Leafs.